We're here in the Congressional Corner with Democratic Representative Antonio Delgado of New York's 19th District. He's been in office since January 2019. Long timer, huh, Antonio?
It's good to be with you, sir.
Okay, let's talk a little about a coronavirus. Everybody's talking about it. What role does the Congress have here?
Well, we certainly want to make sure that we provide the emergency funding to ensure that we have an appropriate defense system. This is an emerging threat. As the CDC indicated, this is something that we need to be mindful of, diligent. I think the process must be one where there's a lot of transparency. And, we want to make sure that we're protecting public health. So Congress needs to make sure that we provide the appropriate funding mechanisms to help state and local actors do the work on the ground where needed.
Are you satisfied with the way that the president is handling it?
I mean, I think the more important question is ensuring that we have in place the specific, tools on the ground as this threat continues to emerge, that we have the appropriate individuals, the doctors, the scientists, making these calls. And I think as long as we're continuing to do that, as long as we have the funding sources ready to go when needed, that should be our focus. This should be a bipartisan endeavor. I think we should shy away from attempting to politicize things at every turn and making them a partisan conversation. I think this is a threat that is a no party, and so we should act accordingly.
Just how dangerous do you think it is?
Well, I mean, I think that's to be determined. I think what we need to do is to be mindful about the threat. I think at this point we've got about 53 or at least 50 plus countries involved, over 80,000 cases. I believe that the death rate is about 2%. It does transmit at a relatively high rate. And so, there are some dynamics here that we have to be mindful of. But I think, we have at this point no reason to do anything more than what we are doing as far as making sure that we have the folks on the ground and we have a strong awareness that this is a threat that is happening and that we have people who are doing the work, where appropriate. So I think from that standpoint, it's more about being diligent, being mindful, and being ready with the appropriate mechanisms as things develop.
Do you approve of the president naming his vice president as the head of this whole thing?
Yeah. Again, whether or not, the president made the right decision in naming the vice president for this role, it's the president's decision. What I'm more focused on is making sure that everybody involved in this situation is doing the work. And at this point, I don't have any reason to believe that we are in that position. I think we are all acutely aware now of what the dynamic is. And we should continue to maintain, intense diligence around it. Making judgment calls at this point, this early in the game, about decisions, is to play politics in a way that I don't know is particularly helpful.
Okay. Let me just ask you about the impeachment. I take it you voted for the impeachment, did you not?
Correct.
Okay. And it's now that it's behind us, has that changed? In other words, has the House Democrats changed their agenda now that that's gone?
Well, my approach, and I like to talk about myself as opposed to what the party's agenda is, because more than anything, I represent the community, and I represent the community irrespective of party affiliation. I've introduced over 30 bills, and more than half of those bills are bipartisan bills. I'm one of only six House members to get two or more bills signed into law. And a good part of that is my commitment to bipartisanship. So, my approach from day one prior to the inquiry was to represent everybody, to pursue legislation that would reflect the needs of New York 19, from broadband to health care, to clean drinking water, dealing with PFAS contamination, to ensuring that we're protecting our environment. All these things are of critical importance, and I've addressed them from day one and I continue to address them. Nothing has changed for me in that regard.
Your first bill is passed, the Service Disabled Veterans Small Business Continuation Act. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, this is a bill that my very first bill I introduced, which, by the way, passed the House unanimously. So there wasn't a single nay vote, a complete bipartisan bill. Under the current law, the spouses of service disabled veterans can receive a federal contracting preference in the event that the spouse passes on or the veteran passes on, so long as the veteran has a disability that is related to service at the level of 100%. So if the individual veteran has a 80% connectivity rate or a 55% connectivity rate, the surviving spouse does not get the federal contracting preference. I think it's pretty ridiculous that the percentage of disability can impact, whether or not this preference continues. And I, with good reason, the entire House agreed with me. And so we were able to get that bill through. It would allow the contracting preference to extend to the spouse, no matter the percent of the disability tied to service, whether it's 20%, whether it's 80%, whether it's 100%. So, very pleased to see that bill get through the House on a unanimous basis. I try to work very hard to help our veterans all across the district. We have a number of bills that we've worked on in this space. We have bills that also create tax credits for the spouses of service members to be employed by employers. We've got a bill passed the House that ultimately would segregate benefits by minority status, so we can know whether or not women are getting the benefits that they're owed to the degree that others are, or people of color. So that actually passed the House as part of the Deborah Sampson Act. So we're pleased with some of the work that I've been able to do in this space, and we'll continue to do so.
Can you give me an example real quickly, because I know we're running out of time, but can you give me an example of what one of those businesses might be that a spouse could be entitled to participate in?
Well, it's any small business. The key factor here is whether or not the veteran owns the business, right? So it's really, in the event that a veteran is running a business at that point, the veteran passes on. The question is whether or not the federal contract that the business may have received, while the veteran was alive, continues on in his or her passing. So any small business could be, available or be availed to that contracting preference. The question really is ultimately, does it go on to the surviving spouse?
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about contamination. Could you tell us a little about your work there, and why won't the EPA, the Environmental Protection Administration, set a maximum level for PFAS chemicals yet?
Yes, this is a real challenging an issue, and it's one that is very frustrating. The fact that we have communities like Hoosick Falls and Petersburg who have been impacted directly by PFAS and PFOS contaminants that cause, by the way, this is a known fact. It's accepted in science now. Cancer, kidney failure, autoimmune disorders. These are real, real threats to life. And the fact that here we are with this knowledge in hand, undeniable knowledge, and the EPA still continues to punt the issue of what the maximum contaminant level of exposure ought to be is flat out insane. It's absurd. And it is reckless. We've tried very hard from the beginning to elevate this issue. I've had some success in this space. We were able to get PFAS legislation included in the NDAA that would require folks who are using it, by folks I mean companies that are using it, to include it on the toxic release inventory, what the amount actually is, so that we're aware of to what degree this toxin is being used and where. So that's a part of the NDAA. But we still do not have clean drinking water standards that should be a part of any future legislation. We still don't have an MCL, which is deeply problematic. I also was able to get, as part of the PFAS Action Act, which, by the way, we got through the House We introduced and got through the House earlier this year in January with 25 Republicans on board. So it's a bipartisan bill that would require the EPA to begin setting an MCL, that would make sure that we have PFAS regulated under the Clean Drinking Water Act. So we have legislation that we've been able to get through the House that I was happy to champion, but we needed to get through the Senate, and we need the EPA to proactively do what it ought to do, which is to protect folks from harm and ensure that drinking water is, in fact, clean.
Okay, we're out of time for this segment, Congressman. And when we come back the next time, I'd like to continue on this for a little while. First of all, thank you very much for being here with us. We very much appreciate it.
And when My we pleasure.
Back, we'll try some more.